You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Lauren Neely. She's talking to me from London. Lauren, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Lauren, let's talk about what you're working on right now. We could talk about upcoming shows, too, but what are you doing in your studio at the moment?
At the moment, I've sort of branched off from a series that I was working on that I've sort of framed as fictional memories, which is it's a series of what I'd like to call things that are in my mind that have a resonance with me but haven't actually happened. So fictional scenes, fictional characters, but draw from truths in my life. And at the moment, I'm sort of going a little bit deeper into that series and looking specifically at the figures, which are mainly female nudes. And I'm sort of taking them to the next level and exploring what I can do with them at the moment.
So that's very interesting. I mean, these are narrative works, of course, right? They're not only figurative, as you were saying, but they're narrative. They tell stories of related to, as you're saying, fictional memories, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's such an interesting topic. I mean, I'd like to get into also your medium and what you're doing, but that topic of fictional memories is kind of fascinating because in a way, all memories are a bit fictional, aren't they? We might remember a factual event differently than someone else who was there would remember it, or we might remember it differently, you know, 10 years from now.
Totally. Recall is just, you can try and make it as objective as possible, but at the end of the day, it is all narrative, and it is intensely subjective.
And so can you talk about what kind of memories or imagery you're working with, what kind of fictional memories? Because it's, in a way, I guess I'm kind of interested in knowing what's the difference between fictional memories as opposed to fictional tableaus or scenes.
Sure. So I start with a space in mind. So a place that is personal and is grounded in reality. So I'll take my bedroom, for example, and from memory, not from imagery, sort of structure that on the canvas, and then sort of put down in paint a scene of, it'll be a figurative scene, and it'll be either something reflecting on something quite mundane, but somehow the process of recall through visualization makes for a very sort of like a vibrating energy from head to hand to canvas that I find really interesting, and it gives it a sort of a really vibrant energy, a tangible energy that I think is really interesting.
And that's interesting to talk a little bit more about that tangible energy because and what it means to be vibrating, because your paintings do look very much like they're full of movement and action. Even if people are sitting down, there seems to be a lot of movement. Is that partly what you mean by energy or no?
Yeah, absolutely. Completely.
And so what else is happening with these works? Some of them are going into an upcoming show, right? Want to talk a little bit about that show or we could talk about another show, because I'm kind of interested in how all the paintings talk to one another when they're assembled.
Sure. I mean, that is kind of the goal. Eventually, once I've sort of gone a little bit further into this series and sort of have really examined the way the figures, the depth of the figures and where I can take them, once I have a little bit more content, it would actually be really great to have them all up and in a conversation together, so to speak. But at the moment I've got one painting in a group show that's opening in Vienna on the 10th of September. And that painting is, it's a painting of, again, a scene that wouldn't be too far from a scene in my life, where just a couple of girls on the poolside or beach, and you know, there's beer, there's cigarettes, there's gluttony, there's sort of an anxious energy to the picture, and the reason I've put that one into this group show is because it's actually being held in an old pool. The gallery is actually in an old vacant pool.
Wow.
So I figured it was kind of fitting, but also in terms of like the actual painting itself, it actually, it speaks to sort of my present and my experiences from the past couple of months. So it's, it really is very self-reflexive in that respect.
And what happens when all the works are together? If we could talk a little bit about the, you know, the kind of scenes they create, because the, you know, the images and the figures, as you're talking about fictional memories and other scenes you create, they seem to sort of be creating a world of their own in some ways. Or correct me if I'm wrong, but how does that work when they're all together? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, when they're all together, I feel like there's an overwhelming sense of, I'd say, gluttony, flamboyance. I'd say that the figures overall sort of flutter between femininity and gluttony. There's a lot of confidence, and I'd say female strength, sort of as a theme. I sort of make my figures exaggerated. The flaws are exaggerated and flaunted, and there's sort of an energy, a confident energy to the figures that I potentially cannot. I'm not able to reach in my own day to day, so there's sort of attributes that I would like to prescribe to my own life in a way. So I feel like all together the figures in the scene, the figures are have a lot of boisterousness to them. The scenes themselves, I feel like, reflect a lot of my anxieties and a lot of that kind of anxious tension and energy. So altogether, I actually feel like, in a way, it's very self-reflective. But at the same time, it's also sort of a commentary on where feminism potentially is today, and sort of the embracing of flaws and the embracing of gluttonous tendencies and behavior. That's what I'd say. That when they're all together, that's sort of the idea and the energy that I want them to exude.
That's interesting. That's really complex in so many ways, and also sounds like they have such a personal relationship to you. These memories, these scenes, this energy. Is it fair to say that these paintings perform a kind of coming to grips with things for you? It seems like almost confrontational in a way of supporting your own strength and managing, you know, faults or weaknesses or whatever you want to call that. Are they? I mean, am I misreading that, or are they that personal? And is the process something that is effective to you that way?
Yeah, absolutely. You're on the money completely. These are the attributes that I sort of give to my figures are attributes that I would love to prescribe to myself in my own life. I'd say my day-to-day, I say an overriding energy of my presentation of myself. There's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of hesitation. And, you know, and in a way, confidence as well. But I'd say that these figures sort of exude lust and excess and confidence and flamboyance. And that's those are attributes that I would really love to see come out more in my day-to-day. So I feel like, yeah, the figures absolutely are personal in that way. I mean, they reflect a side of me that is actually more internal and that I, you know, potentially, I'd say, suppress in a way. For, you know, various reasons.
Sure, sure. I mean, that's where we're all at, right? That's a, human condition, you know, of what we're, you know, what we don't want to look at, right? What we can't look at, you know. I was just reading a little bit about Carl Jung and his whole ideas, you know, of how do we look at the things that we don't want to look at? It's not an easy thing to do because we don't want to look at them.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's some really fabulous things about the things that we don't want to look at that I would like to sort of explore, that I am exploring through my practice. You know,
and
grotesque
you
and mundane.
Yeah, let's talk about that, the grotesque mm-hmm. and the mundane, because, you know, I think this is, of course, I agree with you and I understand what is the, I forgot what word you just used, but the value in looking at things we don't want to look at for you? And you mentioned the words grotesque and mundane, and I think you're about to say more.
Yeah, so I think that the value in that is that everybody has an experience with themselves that is grotesque and mundane. I mean, as much as anybody would prefer to think otherwise, it's just an unavoidable thing, an unavoidable attribute of the human condition. There are just unsavory moments and parts of ourselves. And I feel like in my practice, my figures do try and sort of actually not only embrace it, but flaunt it and not be ashamed of it and unabashedly sort of exude it, and I feel like just in broader terms, these are things that should not be ignored and suppressed. I know social norms sort of dictate that beauty and femininity are the opposite end of grotesque and sort of mundane and unsavory flaws sort of thing. And I feel like they're much closer in the spectrum than we're preached to about it. And that's, I feel like that's sort of a meeting point that I sort of strive to achieve.
That's so interesting in a way. And I mean, when you were learning about painting, going to school, how was that handled? I mean, different schools handle things differently, but you know, you're talking about painting as almost something transformative, right, for you and for the public potentially. That's not something we hear a lot, or I would imagine you didn't hear in your education as a painter, or was it?
No, to be honest, I went to the Art Institute of Boston, and it was very much a classical training. And when it came to sort of like internal self-expression and really sort of pushing the boundaries of what you've got inside and taking it outside, it was actually a very modest education. But I did my MA at Sotheby's in London, but I did that in contemporary art history and theory, and that's sort of where I was able to look at other artists and sort of really understand the grappling of technique and then internal perseverance and putting sort of head to canvas. So I'd say in that respect, like actually actioning my own artwork through my education, there was less of an exploration of what it was to sort of take my psyche and really explore that. But looking at other artists and other periods in history, it was it became more apparent that it was actually not only important but really fascinating, actually.
Yeah, that is fascinating. And to talk a little bit about Sotheby's Institute of Art, because that's interesting that you took that step also and kind of immersed yourself in art history. That sounds like it influenced you a lot, because in art history, when we look back on things, I guess you see more about the artist's intention and often the relationship to their life, whereas in contemporary art, meaning, you know, artists living and working today, we often don't see that connection. I mean, I've talked to a lot of artists through this series, and of course some talk about that and the emotional quality of work or the psychological quality of work, but most don't talk about it so personally or as related to their life the way you do. But I imagine at Sotheby's that seems kind of pivotal in understanding that idea, the relationship of artists' inner life or outer life and their art.
Sure. I mean, so in particular, I was thinking about Carolee Schneeman and her inner scroll. I mean, that for me was sort of a turning point, sort of like, you know, wow, this is literally somebody who is taking what is inside and putting it outside and doing it in a strong and intensely revealing way.
Right, you're talking about, of course, the performance where she's pulling a scroll out of her vagina and she's reading it, right? A very
kind of
Stunning piece by her. Okay, yeah, so go on, because that is, yeah, very powerful performance, of course.
Yeah, very, very powerful performance. And as far as, like, thinking about how you take something that is so personal and intimate and then put it on not only on show but actually celebrate it, be it grotesque, be it intense and I guess in a way disgusting, as some have described it, and just, I guess, intense in a way that make for a lot of discomfort. And for me, that was sort of seeing that piece and understanding that it really resonated with me, because she is actually, you know, she was taking her body and actually using that as her art form. But for me to be able to sort of take my figures and use them in a similar, I guess, in a way that it is in almost an homage to sort of that aesthetic, I found really, really interesting and really, really resonated with me.
I like that. And when you had your first shows, maybe we can talk a little bit about that. How are they received? Carolee Schneeman's work, of course, was performance, and she's done paintings as well and a lot of things. I just recently saw a big show she had here in New York at PS1. But how are they received? Because you're in the marketplace more, right? These are works that also can be sold more easily, and if so, what's the relationship to that or to your collectors?
Well, interestingly enough, this direction for me is, I wouldn't say it's new, but I've sort of really been devoted to it for about a year now. My work has slowly gone from working from existing imagery and sort of bringing out the narrative aspect of something that's a little bit mundane in a photograph and sort of immortalizing that into oil paint. And taking something that was simple and perhaps uninteresting, and using this historic medium that was used to sort of immortalize gods kings, and that sort of juxtaposition I found interesting a few years ago when I was first started showing. And then I just sort of went from existing imagery to existing memories. And so the transition from using existing imagery to using memories to then exploring figuration in memories, that has sort of been a process for me. So the collector base, I wouldn't say it's changed, but there's been new interest. It's been received a little bit differently, this new work, than some of the older work, in absolutely a good way, potentially alienating a little bit of my initial collector base, just because they're a lot more abrupt now than they were. But that hasn't been out of the blue. Yeah, it's been a process.
Well, it's great talking to you about this. Before I ask you the last question, is there anything you want to say about your upcoming show or any question I should have asked? Feel free to plug anything at this time. Your website and links to things will be within this interview, but is there anything else you want to say?
Well, the painting in the group show in Vienna the exhibition is called Vienna Calling, and it opens on the 10th of September, and it's at a gallery called Gallery Pool, funnily enough. I can just sort of watch the social media space for any upcoming events and competitions. But yeah, that's it, really.
Lauren, what are you reading at the moment? I'm always curious what people are reading.
So at the moment I'm reading Sapiens.
It's interesting. That's the second time I heard about that in the past week or so. It sounds like it's a fascinating book.
It is. It's really interesting. And for me, it just sort of goes hand in hand with what I'm thinking about when I'm painting, as far as like the human condition and just the fleshiness of people.
And that's Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind by Yuval Noah Harari, right?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
Well, Lauren, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been a pleasure hearing about your work, and I wish you the best.
Thank you. It's been lovely speaking to you. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.